If you spent like 2 hours this past Saturday furiously deep cleaning your house, well, the source material we are looking at today suggests you didn't just waste your weekend.
No, you probably set your family up for way more stress by Monday morning.
Right. Which is wild to think about. The whole Saturday cleaning marathon is basically a complete myth, and today we are completely dismantling it. So, welcome to this deep dive.
Glad to be here. And we are talking directly to you, the listener, especially if you're, one of those busy parents navigating the intense hustle of the Greater Toronto Area.
Oh, yeah. You're juggling those miserable Drago train commutes, the crawling traffic on the 401, kids' extracurriculars, and obviously a demanding job on top of that.
It is exhausting. And our mission today is to rescue you from that never-ending stress-inducing cycle of household messes. We're using this incredibly practical guide published by Mrs. Cleanmull.
Yeah, and the central premise of this guide, it completely re-engineers how a family operates. Like, it's entirely focused on maintaining a tidy home with kids, but without letting the chores completely cannibalize what little free time you actually have left.
Exactly. Because, I mean, trying to maintain a pristine show home when you have toddlers running around is just, it's a losing battle.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because instead of burning our precious weekends scrubbing baseboards and feeling guilty that our living room doesn't look like a magazine spread, we're going to look at how a 15-minute routine, a very realistic routine, can totally transform your living space.
And we really want to give you a shortcut to a functional, happy environment. Because what's fascinating here is the fundamental shift in how we approach the very concept of cleaning.
Right, moving away from just trying to find the motivation to do it.
Precisely. We're relying entirely on systems now. The guide points out that the difference between a family that manages to stay tidy and one that is constantly drowning in mess, well, it has absolutely nothing to do with having more willpower.
Or miraculously finding an extra hour in the day, right?
Yeah.
Which makes perfect sense because motivation is it's a finite biological resource.
Yeah,
By the
really.
time you get home at 6 p.m., you make dinner, you wrangle the toddlers, your cognitive battery is literally at zero. You just can't rely on motivation to fold laundry at 9 p.m.
No, you can't. A system, on the other hand, bypasses that need for motivation entirely. And in this context, a system means every single item in your home has a designated place. But there's a critical caveat here.
Right, the friction thing.
Yeah, putting things away must be physically and psychologically easier than leaving them out.
Which requires investing in the right storage, right? Like removing the friction. If putting a toy away means a child has to open a closet, unlatch a heavy plastic tub, fit the toy inside like some complicated Tetris piece, and latch it back up.
Their brain just says no.
Exactly. It calculates that caloric and cognitive expenditure and simply says, no, I'm just going to drop it on the rug. It's like the difference between a vault and a funnel.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it.
Right. A closed toy box is a vault. It requires executive function to access. But an open basket in the corner of the room, that's a funnel. Gravity and a simple toss just do the work for you.
The funnel concept is a perfect visualization. You are basically manipulating the physical environment so the default behavior naturally aligns with the tidy room.
Yeah.
And this low-friction environment is what makes the guide's magic habit actually achievable, which is the 15-minute family tidy before bed.
This is the cornerstone of the whole system, isn't it? Everyone in the household tackles a specific zone for just 15 minutes. We're talking basic reset tasks.
Right. Clearing the floor of trip hazards, maybe wiping a bathroom sink, running the dishwasher, just 15 minutes.
And the psychological return on investment for those 15 minutes is massive. Because when you wake up to yesterday's mess, you are starting your day in a state of cognitive deficit.
Oh, absolutely. Your brain scans the room, it perceives this huge backlog of unfinished tasks, and it immediately spikes your cortisol.
The stress hormone.
Exactly. The stress hormone spikes before you have even poured your coffee. It's an awful way to start the day.
Thinking about this 15-minute rule, it mirrors dental hygiene much more than it does like a fitness marathon.
How do you mean?
Well, doing a brisk 15-minute tidy every single day is like brushing and flossing daily. The Saturday 2-hour cleaning binge, on the other hand, is like skipping brushing all year and hoping a brutal, painful trip to the dentist will fix everything.
That is a brutally accurate analogy.
Right. The binge is exhausting, it completely eats your weekend, and you end up resenting the entire process.
Yeah, and by changing the physical environment overnight in those short, manageable bursts, you drastically lower the cognitive load for parents the next morning. You establish a functional baseline.
So you prevent those weekend cleanups from morphing into multi-hour recovery operations. But, A system is only as successful as the people participating in it.
Which leads us to the kids.
The most daunting reality for any parent, children absolutely must be part of this system. But getting kids involved without it turning into a daily exhausting battle of wills, that requires some highly strategic framing.
It does. The secret to avoiding those battles isn't just demanding they clean up. It's about understanding their cognitive limits.
Right. Assigning hyper-specific age-appropriate zones rather than giving vague instructions. The guide is totally adamant that vague tasks are the enemy.
Because if you tell a kid, clean the living room, their brain just shorts out.
Yeah, they look at a chaotic expanse of couch cushions, snack wrappers, action figures all over the floor, and the task feels insurmountable.
Because clean the living room actually requires advanced executive function skills.
Mm-hmm.
A young child doesn't know how to categorize the mess or prioritize the steps or even define what clean means in that context.
They just see chaos.
Exactly. The instruction needs a clear, definitive endpoint, like pick up all the blue blocks and put them in the red bin.
And instead of a massive list of age brackets, the source breaks this down by developmental milestones, which I found much more actionable. Like for toddlers under 4, it's purely about friction reduction.
Right. No drawers, no complex shelves.
Just tossing items into open bins and maybe clearing their own plastic plate from the table. But right around age 5, there is this fascinating cognitive leap. Chores shift from just physical sorting to actual identity building.
Yes, and this is where they are asked to imperfectly make their bed, feed the pets, maybe set the table, or wipe their spot after meals.
And that word imperfectly is heavily emphasized by the guide.
For a very specific reason, yeah.
See, I have to push back on this a little bit because it triggers a major pain point for parents.
Mm.
Does a 5-year-old making a bed imperfectly, meaning, you know, the blanket is lopsided, the sheets are all bunched up, the pillow is sideways, does that actually help keep the house clean?
I get why that feels frustrating.
It feels like the parent is just creating more mental load by having to supervise a botched job, all while fighting the urge to just swoop in and fix it so the room actually looks decent.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to fundamentally redefine the objective here. At age 5, the goal of making the bed is absolutely not aesthetic perfection.
It's not about the room looking good at all.
Not at all. It is about agency and identity. You are building the child's identity as a contributing member of the household ecosystem.
Oh, I see.
If a parent swoops in and fixes that lopsided blanket behind them, the implicit message sent to the child is that their contribution is inadequate.
Which strips away their agency.
Exactly. And their willingness to participate tomorrow. Why would they try if you're just going to redo it?
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the source backs this up with hard data from a University of Minnesota study that completely changes how we should view these frustrating household moments.
It's a landmark study, really.
The research proves that childhood chores are actually a foundational developmental tool, not just a way to outsource vacuuming to your kids.
The researchers found that children who start doing regular household chores from a very young age, like around 3 or 4, show significantly stronger problem-solving skills later on.
And better emotional regulation, right?
Yes, and a much higher self-confidence by the time they reach early adulthood compared to children who did not have household responsibilities.
Because when a child learns to navigate a task, even a simple one like sorting laundry into lights and darks, they aren't just cleaning. They are practicing sequential logic.
They are identifying patterns, categorizing data, and understanding cause and effect.
And that is the exact same foundational logic they will use in coding or advanced math classes a decade later.
The cognitive pathways are identical.
Yeah.
And from an emotional standpoint, it pays massive dividends for their self-confidence. They grow up with an internalized narrative that says, I am a capable person who can manage my environment.
So that messy, bunched-up blanket isn't a failure of domestic aesthetics. It is a successful, long-term deposit into their future adult competence.
That's a beautiful way to phrase it.
And following that developmental arc, by the time kids hit 9 to 12 years old, they have the motor skills and executive function to handle multi-step processes, like emptying the dishwasher, managing the recycling, wiping down bathroom mirrors.
And if you establish that low-friction system early on, by the time they are teenagers doing their own laundry from start to finish or mopping their own spaces, these tasks aren't perceived as sudden, unfair punishments.
Right. It's not a shock to the system.
Exactly. They are simply the established rhythms of how the household operates.
Okay. So with the kids empowered and the developmental psychology working in our favor, we need to look at exactly where we aim our energy during that 15-minute daily tidy. The guide outlines three distinct strategies depending on the space.
Yes, continuous flow, visual editing, and preventative micro habits.
Structuring the task by these mechanisms ensures you get the highest functional return on a very low time investment. Let's start with continuous flow, which applies primarily to the kitchen.
The source recommends the single loop method here.
Right. After dinner, you give the stove and counter a quick wipe, you run the dishwasher, and crucially, empty the dishwasher first thing in the morning.
That loop eliminates the need for a dedicated, hour-long kitchen scrub on the weekends.
Because an empty dishwasher in the morning means dirty dishes go straight in during the day rather than piling up in the sink.
And creating a massive visual bottleneck, yeah. Not to mention attracting pests. You are maintaining the functionality of the space continuously rather than letting it crash and trying to recover it.
Then we move to preventative microhabits, which target the bathrooms. A one-minute morning wipe of the sink and toilet prevents toothpaste and mineral buildup. But the guide also insists on using a squeegee on the shower door after every single use to keep the glass clean indefinitely.
It does recommend that, yes.
I am imagining a tired parent who just wrangled three kids to bed, finally getting a hot shower at 10 p.m. Are they genuinely going to stand there shivering, squeegeeing the glass every single night? It sounds like a punishment.
It definitely sounds demanding when viewed in isolation. But if we evaluate the trade-off in friction, spending 10 seconds squeegeeing water off glass while you are already wet prevents you from having to spend an hour on your knees with a toxic chemical spray later.
Scrubbing calcified soap scum a month down the line.
Exactly.
So the toothbrushing analogy again, preventative maintenance versus painful extraction. But I think the most fascinating strategy is the third one, visual editing.
Yes, this applies to the living room and the kids' bedrooms.
And it relies heavily on how human neurology actually works. In the kids' room, prioritizing the floor and the bed for just 3 minutes makes the room look manageable, regardless of how messy the shelves are.
This raises an important question about visual processing, because human brains do not process every single detail of a room simultaneously.
That would require way too much computing power.
Right. Instead, our evolutionary biology forces us to scan environments and look for shortcuts to assess whether a space is safe and orderly.
So we latch on to the largest, most prominent horizontal planes, the visual anchors. In a bedroom, it's the floor and the bed. In a living room, it's the coffee table and the rug.
Precisely. If those specific surfaces are clear, the brain is essentially tricked into perceiving the entire room as clean. Even if the bookshelves are disorganized and the magazines are chaotic.
It's exactly like web design. If the main hero image at the top of a website is sleek and striking, users automatically assume the entire website is premium and well-built, even if the back-end code is a total mess.
That's a perfect comparison.
The coffee table is the hero image of the living room. By spending just 2 minutes fluffing the couch cushions and clearing the coffee table before bed, we are literally hacking our brain's perception of the space to prevent that morning cortisol spike.
You are investing tiny amounts of time into the specific surfaces that dictate the psychological weight of the room. It's strategic visual management, not deep cleaning.
But even with perfectly optimized 15-minute routines and brilliant visual anchors, and kids building their sequential logic with chores, a house with toddlers is never, ever going to look like a magazine spread.
No, it really isn't.
At a certain point, we have to talk about the immense emotional weight of unrealistic societal expectations and when it is actually time to call in the cavalry.
This is perhaps the most empathetic and crucial part of the Mrs. Clean Mall Guide. It challenges modern parents to ruthlessly redefine what success actually means for a busy household.
The core idea here is that lowering your standards isn't just acceptable. It is a strategic necessity.
Absolutely. Trying to maintain a show home with young children is a losing battle that creates immense stress with absolutely zero functional payoff.
The guide urges us to focus solely on health and safety. Keep the food surfaces sanitary, keep the bathrooms clean to prevent mold, keep the floors clear of trip hazards.
And let the rest of it be beautifully, chaotically imperfect. It is an exercise in resource allocation. You have finite energy. Are you going to spend it organizing the linen closet to look like a boutique, or are you going to spend it regulating your own nervous system and connecting with your family?
So what does this all mean for families living in the GTA, where you often have two working parents dealing with long commutes and intense schedules?
Well, the guide specifically notes that a bi-weekly professional cleaning is one of the best investments these families can make.
Mrs. Clean Mall's residential service spans Vaughan, Richmond Hill, and the greater region, specifically to handle the deep tasks. like scrubbing the grout, deep cleaning the floors, heavy sanitization.
Because those are the heavy lifting tasks that are nearly impossible to execute properly when you have toddlers physically underfoot. By outsourcing the deep cleaning, your daily 15-minute family routines transform from exhausting recovery operations into mere maintenance.
But there is a lingering societal guilt here. I mean, modern parenting culture implicitly tells us we should be able to do it all right, excel at work, raise perfect children, and maintain a spotless home.
It's a toxic expectation.
Hiring a professional cleaner is often internalized as failing to manage your own life.
I want to validate anyone feeling that pressure, but we must dismantle that narrative. Hiring help is not a failure of character. It is a reallocation of capital to buy back time.
Buying back your weekends.
Exactly. Adjusting your aesthetic standards downwards for a few years while your children are young is a highly conscious, intelligent prioritization of your family's connection and your own mental health. You are actively choosing peace over an artificial standard of perfection.
Choosing peace over an artificial standard of perfection. I love that. The shortcut to a well-informed, functional home life isn't scrubbing harder or enduring miserable Saturday cleaning marathons.
No, it's building storage systems that act as funnels, not vaults.
Right. It's empowering your kids through specific, age-appropriate tasks to build their future problem-solving skills and identity. It's mastering the 15-minute daily tidy to hack your visual anchors.
And perhaps most importantly, it's granting yourself the grace and potentially the bi-weekly professional support to completely let go of the show home illusion.
It is a holistic approach to managing your environment so that your environment does not dictate your mental state. And as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a thought to mull over, building directly on that fascinating University of Minnesota study we discussed.
Okay, let's hear it.
If starting simple, imperfect tasks at age two build crucial sequential logic, problem-solving skills, and resilience for adulthood, how might we rethink other frustrating daily parenting moments?
That is a profound lens to apply to the chaos of daily life.
Right. What if the spilled milk, the agonizing 30 minutes it takes a toddler to put on their shoes, the endless why questions, what if we stop seeing those as exhausting hurdles keeping us from a quiet, perfectly managed life?
And saw them as opportunities instead.
Exactly. What if instead we view the chaos as a real-time laboratory for raising capable, resilient adults? Maybe the messy, imperfect reality isn't a failure of the system at all. Maybe that friction is exactly how the system is supposed to work.
A powerful reframe for anyone currently in the trenches of parenting.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Go enjoy your beautifully imperfect home.